Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. Today's episode is about the hard talks. The hard talks meaning those talks that address divorce. And those talks come in three categories: between spouses, with the children, and with family, friends, coworkers, and employers. I want to go through those hard talks with you so that when you have to have them, you're in the best position possible. There are several hard talks to have when divorce is imminent, between the spouses, the kids, family and friends, with employers and coworkers. The way in which we have the talks is important. The level of expectation from the talks should be different. The outcome of the talks will hopefully be consistent. So again, if you have pencil and paper, there are several categories of the hard talks, and I want to break them apart with you, and we're going to start with between spouses. And underneath that category, between spouses, I have it broken down into three other subcategories. So between spouses, we have the subcategory when it's mutual, and the next subcategory is when there's adultery, and the third subcategory is when there's substance abuse and children. And the spouses have to talk about that first before they engage in any other talks. So let's talk about when it's mutual and there's no real controversy. It's just a little sad. So when the decision is to unmarry because you've grown apart or fallen out of love, or realize that your choice to be together may have been misdefined. Like, for instance, this is interesting. I was reading an article recently that said, I really thought it was the right decision to marry. We were best friends. We got along so well. But after a few years, they realized they were best friends, but they didn't want to be in an intimate relationship for the rest of their lives. And I thought that was interesting because a lot of times we can be misguided, thinking this person is our best friend, and they are, but we don't normally marry our best friend, because with best friends, and certainly you want to be friends when you marry the person you're marrying, right? But the distinction is, there's another level of intimacy that has to come into play beyond best friends. And that's what is shown to be missing once we engage in a marriage, and we kind of find out over time that additional level of intimacy just isn't there. So, but this category, the mutual identification and desire to unmarry, it's the easiest of all talks because there's no anger. It's just you've grown apart. So when you're dealing with this talk, first of all, have the talk privately, just between the two of you. Make an appointment to do that, either in the house or somewhere else that's more of a regulated environment, or if you've been going to therapy because you really don't understand what's going on, the intimacy isn't there, the spark isn't there, have the talk in front of a family therapist. That would be great, because with a therapist, they can provide emotional guidance and support and the security you need to move from married to unmarried. So when the discussion to unmarry takes place, you can start the emotional divorce. All right, so you get together, you talk about this just isn't working. We like each other, we get along well, but that added spark, that absolutely necessary level of intimacy is just not there. You've now engaged in what I call the emotional divorce. There are two kinds of divorce. There's the emotional divorce, and then there's the logistical divorce. And you have to go through the emotional divorce first. And that just means the layers of grief, the layers of uncoupling. You have to go through the sadness, because even if this is mutual, it doesn't mean you're not going to be sad. You absolutely are going to be sad. This is a huge life change. It's a huge life change if it's just the two of you. It's a bigger life change if you have children. And so that's why I say the emotional divorce should precede the logistical divorce. The logistical divorce is the filing. It's going through all the legal steps you need to take in order to be unmarried, to be divorced. If you don't take care of the emotional divorce first, and all the pain that you have to go through, that'll show when you're trying to make decisions to unravel assets and debts, to put a co-parenting schedule together, to deal with child support and or spousal support. These decisions in the logistical divorce need to be emotion-free, and they can only be emotion-free if you've given yourself the space and the time to go through all the emotions that are embodied in the decision to unmarry, and you need to do that before you file. The big question to answer when you have this talk is, am I living an authentic life with fulfillment, laughter, and intimacy? So this is the big underlying question when you have the talk to possibly unmarry, divorce. Are you both living the life you really want to live? Are you having the laughter you want to have? Are you having the intimacy you want? Do you feel that your life is fulfilled? These questions really need to be addressed. They can be addressed independently first and then together, so that you really know that your decision to divorce is the right decision. But honestly, you are in such a good place if this is where you are, if it's merely mutual. Now, the harder one, and this is the subcategory number two, is when there's adultery. Please know that adultery is either a symptom of another issue in the marriage or a lack of interest in the other spouse. Trust is affected. It's tough to rebuild trust and maybe impossible to rebuild trust. So just a couple weeks ago, if you look at the list of podcast episodes, I did a two-part interview on trust. People always think of adultery when they think of trust. And so we're dealing with adultery right now, and it's the biggest issue with trust. But trust comes in so many different ways. It comes in, can you depend on your spouse to pick you up, to do what they say, you know, if there's an appointed organization of an event and time. I mean, little things like this. Can you even trust your spouse to be there on time? We never think about that, but that has to do with trust. Adultery is the biggest issue of trust. So adultery is not to be taken lightly. Don't just go to, you're wrong, you're horrible, I can never live with you again. Before you have the adultery leads to divorce conversation, really get clear with yourself. What does adultery mean to you? And please know that adultery is a symptom. It's either a symptom of you have no more interest in your spouse. Maybe your spouse isn't being intimate with you and you simply need this physical release. You're upset, you're angry, how are you going to get out of this? And you commit adultery. This is the hardest landmine of all to deal with and repair. So either spouse can deal with this conversation. Either the spouse who has committed adultery has to initiate this conversation about adultery leads to divorce, or the spouse who has found out there is adultery has to have the conversation that adultery leads to divorce. Now, you can have another conversation that adultery leads to counseling, we want to repair the relationship, and that's fine. Absolutely fine. But that's not what I'm talking about now. These are the hard talks about divorce. So, the spouse who starts this talk, as I said, is either the spouse who has committed adultery or the spouse who found out about adultery. Two different approaches to the talk, depending on the situation. So if you're the spouse who found out about adultery, and that becomes a deal breaker for you, after much thought, and please give it much thought before you have this I want to get divorced conversation, be as calm as humanly possible when you have this conversation. Get the anger out before you have the talk. This is too important, a talk to have screaming, yelling, crying. And here's why. You're going to have to come to a place of calm anyway when you sort this issue out with yourself and with your spouse. Nothing good comes from screaming and yelling. I know you're going to raise your voice. I know there's going to be a point in the conversation where the frustration, the hurt, the pain comes out. But start it as calm as humanly possible, because when you're calm, you're focused. When you're calm, you can organize your thoughts. You can really talk about how this process then is going to take place, because you really can't deal with it. This is your deal breaker. Trust is so important to you that you really don't feel you can ever rebuild trust. When you speak about broken trust and all the other stuff that goes along with adultery, you need to be clear and focused. This is about divorce, a process that should not be taken hastily. Huge, huge, huge conversation. Now, if you're the one that committed adultery, be honest about why. If you need to apologize, which you always need to apologize, do it. Do it, do it, do it, without the but coming after it. You can't say, I'm really sorry, I was wrong, this is horrible, even though we haven't been intimate for 8,000 years. But I needed to do something. Get the but out, get the but out. Just say why you committed it and come from the I position. Okay, so I was unfaithful to you. I am so very sorry. I really do need more sex. I need more intimacy. I need more activity with you. That's how you come from the I position, and you don't blame the other person. It's about I need, I need, I need. And then your spouse can say, but all you had to do was tell me. All you had to do was have the conversation. More than likely you have had it. And so what you do when your spouse says, I can't believe you just had adultery, you could have talked to me, we could have gone to therapy, this is if you haven't, I did try and talk to you. I did say. And now we're all very clumsy when we're communicating, by the way. You know, in good times we're clumsy. When we want to communicate our needs with each other, it's hard. It's really hard because we have to become vulnerable when we do that. And it's hard to become vulnerable. But the other spouse knows when there's no sex. You know, I have a lot on my plate. I'm a mother. I work. And then I clean. I have all this to do. Life is complicated. And I'm so sorry. Yes, I guess I should have been more attentive to your needs. But you can only have this conversation. This is the divorce talk now. This is not the talk about we need to go to therapy. This is when you've exhausted everything. Adultery is part of the issue, and you're confronting your spouse about that. Then move forward with how you want to transition. That really is part of this conversation. You have to have your game plan ready. I can no longer be married. I have committed adultery, but this is because it's just not working. It's just not working. Or if you have gone to therapy, there should be no shock. It's just not working. I am so sorry I chose this outlet, but it is a sign that I need to be in a different relationship. This is such a hard talk. I keep saying this. Listen, this was my hard talk. My ex-husband committed adultery and explained that in the I want to be divorced talk. I tell this to everybody when I talk about my own hard talk and my own divorce. I never blamed him once. I really never blamed him once for the adultery. And apparently there were more times of adultery that I found out after the fact. And for me, I never blamed because I always thought it was a symptom that there was something wrong in the marriage. What I was upset about was we didn't get a chance to go to therapy at that point in time. Actually, we did go to therapy a couple years later. The filing for the divorce happened. He did it. And it didn't work out because, well, we met on the circus and he went back to another circus. So we met on one circus, dated, got married. Didn't work out. He joined another show and couldn't be consistent with the filing because there are dates that you have to address when you're filing for a divorce. When that doesn't happen, the court wants to close the case. He actually wanted to get back together with me, but here's what happened to me. I worked on myself for a year. I was so sad and so despondent, and I was like Forrest Gump. After I worked every day, I walked and walked and walked until I walked the emotion out. And then I was myself again and happy, and I had a life. I was in Los Angeles having a great time in the events business, producing music, loved my friends, and he fell in love with me again. I couldn't go back. I tried. This is why this divorce talk is so important. And it's if therapy is a possible way of getting back, do it first. Do it first if you can. Because once you go through the healing, once you go through all those levels of grief, it's really hard to go back and open yourself up to that relationship again. I couldn't. I tried. I actually tried, and that's when we went to therapy, and it simply didn't work out. But in no case did I ever blame him for the adultery. I always looked at it as a symptom. And I keep sharing this with everybody because I think it's important. I mean, we're fallible human beings. We will do things to our spouses that we're not proud of, that we wish we could take back, but we can't. And so make sure you really want to be divorced before you do the I want to be divorced talk. That hard talk starts everything else in motion, the plans, the anger, the fear. So please make sure that if you're the person who found out about the adultery, you're very clear that adultery leads to divorce without any other types of steps taken to repair the relationship. Very hard to repair a relationship after adultery. You have to be a very secure person to do that. You have to be emotionally aware and engaged. Very, very hard. And you have to explain how you found out. And you can't be angry. You just really hold it in to be calm. Practice what you're going to say. Go over and over and over what you want to say. Ask why. I mean, do explore why so that you have a greater level of understanding about why your spouse committed adultery. Does it have to do with you, or does it just have to do with him or her? It could be an either-or situation. You could be available sexually, and for some odd reason, that wasn't enough. That has to be explored. And if you're the one that committed adultery, you have to be very clear why. And then the third subtopic under between spouses is if there's substance abuse and there are children. Huge, huge, huge discussion to have. I don't know, this may be as hard as adultery because the person who has substance abuse really doesn't want to admit to it. It's the hardest thing in the world, especially if they've admitted to and gotten treatment for and then say they can do it on an irregular basis. That is about the most unrealistic situation you can be in. You either cannot control the amount of substance abuse you have, the regulation of the substances that you are abusing, you either can or cannot regulate it. You're not in the middle. So, and that's in most cases. So when there's substance abuse in children, substance abuse affects co-parenting and has to be addressed in the divorce talk. Legal advice with an attorney is so unbelievably important so that you know the responsibilities of parents once the divorce is final, and to know the responsibility of the healthy parent if substance abuse is not under control when it comes to being with the children alone. Okay, so let's take a moment with this. Substance abuse comes in many different forms. Yes, it's drugs, it's alcohol, it's also gambling, pornography, money. I mean, there's all sorts of addictions that we have. But the substance abuse that impairs your immediate functioning, which would be drugs and alcohol, that's the substance abuse that's so unbelievably important to have. When you sit down with your spouse and have to have the divorce talk because substance abuse just simply couldn't be reined in and it's ripping the relationship apart, you really have to have legal advice first. You have to know the legal lay of the land. You, as the healthy parent, have responsibilities to keep your children safe from the parent who has substance abuse issues. And the hardest thing of all right now is that we have some states that have legalized marijuana. And that's fine if it's not an issue of uncontrolled use and use to the point where if you're the person that uses marijuana on a daily basis all day, not just to go to sleep at night or occasionally on the weekends. If you are the person that uses marijuana in any way, shape, or form, all day long, you are abusing the substance. Like alcohol, you're not supposed to smoke it all day long. Having it legal means you treat it like alcohol. You use it at the end of the day, but not to the point where it impairs your judgment. And see, it's different when you're in a household with another spouse who may not use it. So if you're in a household with another spouse and you're married and you're the one who uses marijuana a lot, you still have the other spouse to be in control of the children. But when you're in a co-parenting situation and you have the children by yourself, you can't use it. You can't take your mind off of and your focus off of the health and welfare of the children. This is why this is such an unbelievably difficult conversation to have, because the one who uses drugs and alcohol has to be clearly aware of their usage. Now, a lot of people, when they come into mediation, will say, listen, I've had back injuries over the past. I need this for the pain. I get it. But this is where you either need a doctor involved or you need to have that conversation that says, okay, well, what is my judgment like? If I have a bad back, if I have pain, knee pain, all sorts of different kinds of pain that would require the use of CBD or marijuana, is there a way that when you have the children, you don't use it, do something else to prepare you to have the children without using it? Or what is your focus like? Because your other spouse is going to be seriously worried about the kids. And I've dealt with people who have used it. They've gotten pulled over by the police with the children in the car because they were driving erratically, slower, by the way, not fast, but weaving. It really does affect you. This is another tough conversation. And so when you are the healthy parent, you need an attorney to explain to you what your additional responsibilities are. If you don't address this and put this in the co-parenting section of the settlement agreement, you can do a step-up plan. It has to be addressed. Drug use has to be addressed. The ability to be focused on your children 24/7 when you have your children has to be addressed. And so the healthy parent is not trying to make you, if you are the person that has to address the drug use, they're not trying to make you a bad person. Honestly, they're not. Every couple who walks in here wants the other parent to have a healthy relationship with their children. But you can't have a healthy relationship if you use alcohol. Your children will know. And drugs, your children know. Your children know. You're not hiding it from them. And so the healthy parent has to have this talk. Now, there are what we call step-up plans in co-parenting. So if you've allowed your drug use to get a hold of you, and you're in denial that you have drug use, it's going to come out, you're going to go to court about it, you can't put it under the carpet, you must address it. So when you address it, please know there's a step-up plan. Maybe you need to have either monitored visitation with the children until you have control over the drugs, or maybe you have to be at the healthy spouse's house until you have X number of months of controlled program monitoring. Maybe you have to take drug testing. Maybe that's written into the settlement agreement. But then once that's under control, then you can go into another phase of having the children more. So you, if you are the parent that uses drugs, you have to just understand that you have to address it. It's not going to go away. You cannot control it yourself. You really need to go into a program unless you can show. Just show you can control it yourself. If you don't feel that you're ready for a program, if you feel the drug use came from another reason, an outside reason that you need to get a handle of, like for instance, maybe you have anger management issues, and that came from the way you were raised as a child. Maybe you had a parent that had anger management issues. Maybe you were not treated well by your parents. If there's something that you can deal with a therapist emotionally that maybe caused the use of some type of drugs or alcohol, and once that's under control, all of a sudden the need for that that altered sense of reality, that goes away, great, great, then you don't need a program. But there is a reason why you're using it, and somehow you need help with a therapist and or a program. But the co-parenting will be affected by the use of drugs. And so when you have this talk, definitely don't have the kids around. Definitely choose a place where there are no children. So if you have to choose a therapist's office to do the talk, do that. If you have to be in the house because this is the safest place, have the kids go somewhere overnight, because this is going to be a long talk. And if you're the parent who uses drugs, please don't brush it under the carpet. It's not going to go away. And if you're the parent who has to deal with it, the healthy parent, write everything down, take notes, practice what you're going to say, because you have to be very careful dealing with your spouse. You have to have compassion. They need it. Okay, now, the second category of the hard talk with the children. First of all, do it together and plan it out. Please don't say it out of anger. Please don't one of you go to the kids yourselves. This is too hard a talk to have. This is the most sensitive talk you're ever going to have, even more sensitive than between spouses, because your children didn't ask for it. Your children didn't ask to be born, and they didn't ask for the divorce. So please do it together, and please plan it out. Now, how do you plan it out? How do you know the right things to say? Well, videos are on the way. Prepare by watching videos on how to tell the kids. Watch videos on how kids feel about divorce, discussing their fears, concerns, and how to make them happy. So there are a wealth of videos out there. The first video I ever saw was by a filmmaker named Ellen Bruno. Ellen Bruno, and she came to talk at a Los Angeles County Bar all-day seminar that I attended on child custody. Ellen had her own very difficult divorce, and the co-parenting schedule was extremely tough. So once the divorce was over, she decided to make a film, and she only interviewed children from ages 5 through 13, and she asked them all the questions that you're going to be concerned about. The kids were worried about two households. Would they have all their things at both households? Would they forget things for school? If they went to the other parent's house, would they lose their friends and activities that they're used to? And they said that all of this was really important. It's so fascinating. The video is called Split, S-P-L-I-T. And all the kids acknowledged at every age, again, ages 5 through 13, they acknowledged that they were worried about where they would go to school, if they would forget their clothes, would their homework get done correctly, would they have all their books, their toys, their pets. But it's really fascinating to hear them talk, because they all said at the end of the day, none of this mattered. Even moving out of the house that they grew up in, a big concern of parents. Every parent worries about this because they think that staying in the same house will give the children stability. And of course, it's normal, it's logical to think this. But the kids said none of this mattered. At the end of the day, the only thing that mattered was that their parents got along. That's all that mattered, which is why it's so ultimately important to tell them together, to plan it out, and to make sure they know they're loved and that their daily life will be secure and that they are not the cause of the divorce. But let's go back to these videos. There are a lot of videos like this, so just go on the Google search bar and just put co-parenting videos with children, telling children about the divorce, and look at this Ellen Bruno video, Split, S-P-L-I-T. There's even HBO videos on this. Really watch them together so that you can take notes and you can decide how you want to do your conversation. But it also sets you up for what the children are going to want to talk about so that you can prepare your responses properly. Address their fears and concerns. Let them talk without interrupting. And if you watch those videos first, you'll be better prepared to handle their worries because you'll know what's going to come up. Do you tell them while you... Now, here's something. Do you tell them while you're still living together or wait until another residence is found? Do you tell them while you're still living together or do you tell them once another residence is found? Six of one, half a dozen of the other. Great if another residence is already found. Then when you tell them, you segue into the next stage. In fact, you show them the new residence, or maybe before you sign the lease, you show them the residence. This is where I'm going to live. Whoever is going to move out doesn't matter. What do you think? And then you can let them prepare to plan for how they want their space laid out, because don't forget, it's their house too. So they're going to want to have some control. So now you've taken control away from them, unfortunately, when you have the hard talk about getting divorced. But now you've got to give them control back. So let them plan their space. Get a space that will accommodate them. So money is extremely important. We're living through this pandemic. Everybody's incomes, well, a lot of people's incomes are affected downward. And so you may have to compromise in the space that you get. You know, maybe you can't get a 2-3 bedroom place because you just can't afford it. Maybe on a good day before the pandemic, money was tight. There are bunk beds. You know, you can start accommodating space planning, but let them have an input in how they want to plan their space. It will give them the control they need. But let them tell you what they need first. So what if you have to tell them because you're creating separate bedrooms, but you have to stay in the same house? Okay, so you're creating separate bedrooms. That is part of how you have to plan if you have to live together still. At least in California, one of the issues in establishing the date of separation when you start to file is, when did you stop becoming intimate? And what the court would like to see is when there were separate bedrooms established, if that's possible within the same house. So, but if you have to tell the children while you're still living together, make sure they don't think that means there's still a chance of getting back together. So what you could do in a Brady Bunch world, if you have to live together, but they're separate bedrooms, and you want to tell the children because while you're still living together, you're going to start the divorce talk. I mean, you're going to start the divorce filing, sorry. Start living as in a co-parenting situation as if there were two households. So what do I mean? So if one person has always been the person who picks up the children, divide that up between both parents. So look at what your possible co-parenting schedule will be in the preparation for telling the children, and enact that. So when there are going to be two households, obviously each of you are going to have to get them up separately, prepare breakfast. If there's lunches to pack, pack lunch. You're going to have to pick them up, do their homework. So live like you are living in two households in terms of the duties for co-parenting. That will start letting your children see how you will each behave in a co-parenting situation. And then when there are two households, you don't have to change much. And if you can pick places to live that are relatively close together, it will really help because, you know, taking them to school, taking them to after-school activities, taking them to play dates, all these normal things that have to be done with children, they can be easily done. And if the other parent has to pinch it because something came up with work, it's no big deal because the distance will be closer. So that's now with the kids. And be prepared for them to be upset. It's okay. They have to process too. They go through their own stages of grief. Just be there to say, we love you. We love you. We love you. This is not about you. This is about mommy and daddy. Even though we respect each other and we really do care for each other, we just can't remain married. And you really have to say that a lot. The kids need it. Okay. Now we move to the third hard talk with family, friends, co-workers and employers. And I lumped everything together because dealing with yourselves first and dealing with your children second, those are the two most important areas. You do have to tell your family, friends, co-workers, and employers, but they are rather different. And here's what I mean. Let's talk about family first. How do you want to tell family? Do you want to send a letter to each one of them? A group letter that says the same thing? Or do you want to do it verbally? Verbally takes everything out of you. It really does. If you're going to continue, if you're going to tell each person in your family, like you probably are going to want to tell your parents first separately, understood of course, or maybe there's a confidant sibling. But after that, there's so many other family members that need to know. Maybe you want to do just a little group email. I mean, when I say letter, I'm old school. You know, I grew up when we only had pencil and paper. But I would rather, I think you should craft one consistent message. And the consistent message should be carefully thought out, a message in which you don't blame your spouse. You don't need to say why you're getting divorced, at least not in the letter. It's not required. You create a consistent message that you give to almost everyone. And so let's start with that first. Don't blame your spouse. That's the worst thing you can do is blame your spouse. You know I've been unhappy for years. He or she is so difficult to deal with. It just had to happen. or I was going to lose my mind. You don't want to do any of that. Your marriage is personal and private, and you are not required to tell anybody why, not even your parents. But you are going to want to. And there are many different ways, many different reasons why you're going to want to tell your parents personally, but you don't have to go into all the minutiae. There are some parents that don't even want to know. Don't tell me, this is private. I get it. Can I help you in any other way? There are people like that that don't want to hear. But when you start blaming your spouse, it doesn't look good for you. You need to process why you're getting divorced. And if it's your spouse's fault that they've always abused you, now it's adultery, there's substance abuse, whatever the reason is, everybody knows that anyway. They can see before you do that you need to end the marriage. Just say, this is where I'm at. I will come to you if I need emotional support. I'm okay right now. I just need you to be understanding. So once you verbally tell the most important people, just put an email out to everybody else and just say, this is a mutual decision. We are fine. We'll let you know if we need anything. And then ask for what you want. Do you want understanding? Do you want them to keep their distance? Do you want comfort? And do you want non-judgmentalness? I would so ask for non-judgmentalness, I can't tell you. Because who needs to hear somebody else's opinion over and over and over again? And even if people, your friend, your family wants to come to you and say, I'm so supportive, you should have done this a million years ago. I mean, do you really want to hear that too? Do you need your decision to be endorsed is the real issue. If you need your decision to be endorsed, that's a whole separate issue. Because your decision to divorce should really be your own. And you need to get there on your own. And you need to be secure in your own decision making. And I would definitely go to professionals, not family, for this. Your family is invested in wanting to stick up for you and telling you what they know, which is better than what you know. You don't need that. You need industry professionals that do this for a living, that can help you with your communication, that can help you with your clarity of thought, because you need to be clear thinking when you decide to get divorced, so that when you go to tell your family, friends, and coworkers, well, really family and friends first, you're clear. You don't need their help. You don't need them to push you down the road. You need them to understand that you're going through a tough time. And if they could just be there when you need them and not grill you and ask you questions, that would be the best of all. Now let's go to your friends. So your friends, you're going to lose some, by the way, because married couple friends will either choose one of you or they will stay away from both of you. It's so hard to be a married couple friend of the married couple getting divorced. It's so hard. Okay, so why are they your friends? Well, either one of you brought them into the married relationship because one or both of them were your friends prior to getting marriage, or you met them through your children, or you met them through activities that you engaged in. But please know that your friends have a really hard job. It's hard to stay friends with both of you. It's really, really hard. And I did an interview with a woman a couple months ago. Look for an interview that I did with Nikki Bruno on shifting relationships, because she went through this. She lost friends, and she was surprised she lost friends that were her husband's friends before they were hers. And, you know, when we did the podcast, she did come to realize, of course, who else would they choose but the person that they knew before her? It's so hard for them to still be friends with her and him. People feel they need to line up with one or the other, or it's so difficult, they stay away from both of you. They don't want to listen to you talk about the divorce. You are really putting your friends in a very difficult position if you continue to talk about the divorce. If you just go over there and say, I just need a sounding board. They'll listen to you for a little bit and then click, click, click. They don't want to hear you anymore. Who knows if they're going through their own issues? It makes people very uncomfortable when you divulge your personal relationship with them, or they can't help themselves from talking. It is natural for them to say, don't tell anybody, but this is what I just heard. They will do that. If you want your issues to become, or if you want your issues to remain confidential, keep it confidential. Figure out who might stay with you in advance and tell them first. Or, like with your family, maybe write a letter to all of them. But don't blame your spouse. Keep it respectful and simple. And don't be totally shocked if they want to avoid you. Okay, so don't blame your spouse. Just say it didn't work out. Just say it didn't work out. But we are working out the details. We're being respectful. Oh, and of course, obviously, that's if you can be. Well, what if you're in a divorce that you just can't control the other spouse? The other spouse is just mean and cruel, narcissistic. Maybe they have other personality disorders. Doesn't mean you have to be mean. Doesn't mean you can't keep it respectful. If you're the one that can keep it respectful and not blame, do it. What if your other spouse sheds the dirty laundry everywhere and you have friends coming back and saying, listen, I just want you to know this is what he or she is saying. Keep it respectful. Keep it like Denise Richards and Charlie Sheen. From what I know of what Denise has said on the Beverly Hills Housewives, where I get all of my important information, the housewife shows on Bravo, but Denise Richards actually was a great example of a cool person divorcing Charlie Sheen. Very erratic personality. Everybody knows about the drug use. Everybody knows about the anger management and the explosiveness. He did it on Twitter. Lots of news stories. But Denise was of the mind that I have kids. I have to be the one that holds it together. And I'm going to hold it together. I will deal with this. I want to shield my children. And I don't need to be volatile back. I don't need to be disrespectful back. And maybe Charlie will come around. You have to hold your ground if you're the one that can. You have to hold your ground. Coworkers and employers. Okay. Coworkers are, you have to tell them. And why do you have to tell them? A, your behavior is going to change. You can't help it. As much as you're going to try and focus on your work, you're not going to sometimes. Maybe something just happened the night before or the morning of on your way to work. You're going to have to simply tell your coworkers that you're going through a divorce. Have them, and just say, if my behavior changes at all from what you normally know me, forgive me. And maybe just say, hey, Jude, are you okay? Or hey, whomever, are you okay? Your focus may be compromised at work because you're sorting out the details, especially if you haven't gone through the emotional divorce first. If you haven't allowed time from the talk to be divorced to filing, you're going to go through those emotions while you're filing. And believe me, even if you've taken care of the emotional divorce first, you may just have a bad day. So they just simply need to know to be kind to you and give you a little bit of extra understanding. Your energy may be down at times. They need to know. I did a podcast with a gentleman named Michael Roberts, and he talked about being partners with a couple that was going through a divorce and they hadn't taken care of the emotional divorce first, and also being an employee in another situation of a couple going through divorce. He said it was so unbelievably difficult. Caused a lot of havoc. The business lost money. Projects failed because they hadn't gone through the emotional divorce first. So you have to tell your coworkers, but don't do anything more than just say, we're going through a divorce. It's fine. I just want you to be aware of it. And, you know, pat me on the back if I look a little down, or maybe just you know, ask me if I'm okay, and that's it. But give me the space I need to just work through this while I'm going to work. Now, the reason why you have to tell your employer is human resources needs to know, because health insurance is going to be affected once the divorce is final, at least in California. I don't know what your state's laws are. And that's why you have to tell the human resource department and your immediate manager, because they will then come to you with how things will change with your benefits, if you have a pension, any other types of benefits, stock options. You have to really have the talk with human resources, and your manager simply needs to know what your coworkers know. Your energy may be down, you may be a little unfocused, you don't really want to take time off because your work should be your salvage. You know, your work should be the place where you take your mind off of things. Oh, and by the way, do not do texts and emails about the divorce at work. Wait till you get home. You can't work and engage in texts and emails while you're working. Your work output will suffer, and my gosh, you cannot be laid off because of that. You cannot take time off. So I really worry when I send emails to people during the business day. I don't even want to send them to their work emails. I only want their personal emails. And I say, look, if it's something super important, I'll call you on your cell phone. If I need a decision from you for some odd reason during the day, I'll call you on your cell. Do not feel that you are required to respond to me while you're working unless you want to do it during lunch hour. Maybe that's a good time. If you have certain breaks, if you have lunch hour, then use that time to return emails, to me at least, or to the professionals you're engaged with. But if you're getting texts, obviously if you have children, you have to be aware of texts and emails. Because maybe something happened with the kids, maybe the school's trying to get in touch with you. Okay, that we understand. But the normal conversations between your soon-to-be ex-spouse, if they're angry, absolutely don't engage in them while you're working, because that will even more affect you. So within this talk with your spouse, maybe lay some ground rules about communication during the divorce process. You know, maybe say, let's keep our texts and emails to the evening, or let's just acknowledge that if we write each other texts and emails during the day and they're not of an emergency nature, we will only answer later on, so that if the responses don't come during the day, it's okay, you've already prepared for that. A lot of groundwork you have to prepare for with your spouse when you're engaging in the logistical divorce. So that's what I have to say for today. And to recap, this was a discussion about the hard talk. And the hard talk comes in three areas: between spouses, with the kids, and with family, friends, coworkers, and employers. I hope this has helped you. There's so much going into divorce, but please call me if you need any help. You have been listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. You can reach me at Judy@constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com, or through my website. Phone number is there. Subscribe to this podcast by hitting the subscribe button, and please tell anybody you know. There are so many topics we deal with that are helpful, and that is why I'm here. Thank you for listening. Talk to you next week.